Look, if you're listening to our show, we have to assume that you like to smoke weed. I mean, we're high throughout the entire episode. We assume you are too. Well, if you are a fan of the marijuana, such as we are here, then you can get yourself a great deal by heading over to herbapproach.org. Clearing my throat from some of that green shit right now. Head on over to herbapproach.org, sign up, and every new profile gets a $25 discount card applied to their account. Anytime you want to use it, it's right there for you. You can sit on it for a while. I'm waiting on mine because we have something special coming down the line for you very shortly. Again, head on over to herbapproach.org and get yourself some fine primo Canadian bud.
Hey DC fans, it's Gary from Burton's Comics.
Keep going, Bobby's in the background.
I just want to let you know that Burton's Comics is open and ready to serve you in Hamilton, Ontario, down 725 Barton Street East. Coming for some deals on the weekend. Thanks.
Is this thing on? I mean, welcome the fuck back to the DC Animated Review Podcast. Y'all know this voice. You know who I am.
Who is that?
I am the original sicko, the host with the most who keeps it down like buttered toast, the best thing breathing, the greatest thing going. Who needs sliced bread with my voice in your head? Encourage pro wrestling's only four-time commentator of the year. I am Empire's own, the clown jester, Clowny J.
I guess we're on and abouts, and we're back. We're back at it with those fancy little bits and pieces, of course, you know, followed with our colorful introductions, our various reactions, and of course, you know me well, and the fright furball himself, the fluffle-up, I guess. I am the skid of mid, I am the mize. What up?
And you know, she brings certain doom. She's always sitting in the room. She is silent but violent. Usually knitting, but this week she's quitting. She's on her tab and looking fab. She is the little one. She's not even gonna wave hi.
We were out in the snow earlier, and we're pretty sure we had a fourth person with us, and she killed him. She killed Thomas.
Yeah. We've known, you know, Thomas for years, we think.
We're pretty sure. That was just hella wind that was blowing, and it made like a Lord of the Rings walk, so it felt like our party was more encumbered than it should be. We're pretty sure there was a Thomas there. Might have been in our minds because, you know, it was very bright out.
See, you keep making the Rings references when going out for our walk. Out there, it's more like fucking Hoth, dude. It's a Star Wars reference out there.
Well, if it was Hoth, I don't understand why it's cold.
I'm gonna slice you up like a tauntaun, you keep this shit up.
Hey. That's all right. I'll just be all up in that Qui-Gon Jinn method of operating. You know, I'll be in two.
Well, I know we're normally just a straight up DC podcast, but in the time that we've been off, of course, the Book of Boba Fett has come and gone. I fucking loved it.
Oh, and the Qui-Gon Jinn thing was just a matter of, I bet if Qui-Gon Jinn didn't actually die, Darth Maul wouldn't have been cut in half. So just referencing that whole bit. I just thought Qui-Gon Jinn was catchier than Darth Maul. But at any rate, yeah, the Book of Boba Fett was a fantastic series. It was overall a unique storytelling in mainstream Star Wars characters. I liked it a whole lot.
We do have a lot of news to get through. It's been a few minutes since we've had an episode, so I got a couple of just the highlights here. But there is a lot to get through, including, you know, recent comics that have come out that we could recommend, what we're reading, and so much more.
Yeah, getting a good chance to catch up with everybody, you know, let us know what you're up to, of course, on the socials. We'll be dropping them a little later on. But as for filling up and catching up with various news over the last little while, there's been quite a bit that's gone on, quite a bit that's been shown to us, and it's... Yeah, quite a lot of opinions, quite a lot of conversation revolving these aspects.
We do apologize that it has been so long. We are going to try get it maybe at least once a month. In winter months, it is a little harder to get a recording schedule set up. But once the weather does get nicer here in Canada, things will pick up on a little more of a regular basis, we would hope.
Oh, yeah. Definitely got something all situated up there. I got my work hours all lined up and proper and all that jazz. So time off that I have and time that I have off, that can also help in the betterment of the scheduling and everything like that. Of course, how we react and so forth will always differ on the fantastic things to come ahead. So we look to keep updated as we catch up with you on all these various conversable parts. Like you said, there's a lot of it, and there's a lot of exciting shit that's going on with all these various topics.
Some of the quicker topics to get through right now, of course, would be some of the reading recommendations. Just recently, the main thing I would recommend picking up is the Legion of Superheroes versus Justice League arc that just started. Even I complained about Bendez's work on things like Checkmate, but a book like this where he's juggling so many characters and setting up so much story, this is where Bendez truly shines. Look over your
cup there, Miles. Well, that's always a... Sorry, it's empty there. That's always good. Justice League versus, like, a big-name team in the DC Universe is normally a really good tale to be told. Anywhere from classic villain collections like the Legion of Doom, anything newer, I guess, like whether it's, you know, the Beings of Apocalypse, or it happens to be the characters from all the Dark Metal universes, or even now with good guy teams like Legion of Superheroes, even when they went up against the Suicide Squad and they had that whole Maxwell Lord tale being told, fantastic shit. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what this has in store for us going forward in the future of the Justice League and possibly the Justice League Incarnate, depending on how the storytelling's done.
You know, using that as a recommendation, transferring quite easily into news, because there is some book news as well, titled The Sandman Universe, Nightmare Country. This horror fantasy series is being written by Tinian, and will be drawn by Lissandro Estherin, who previously did art duty on horror book Redneck. So each issue will feature a guest artist who create a nightmare dream sequence, with the first issue being done by Yannick Paquette, and it'll be coming out on April 12th.
Yannick Paquette, I really enjoy his styles. I was a huge fan when he especially tackled titles I was reading from a while back, so like Wolverine Origins. He also did a good portion of Batman stuff that I really was hooked into. He represented the art style really well, considering the storytelling of back when, and things got weird for Batman back when, and it was a lot of fun, like, being able to see it so colorfully illustrated.
Now, this series will not be featuring the Endless as the main characters. Instead, it'll be the serial killer, the Corinthian.
Oh. Well, I would imagine a series that would have a villain called the Endless wouldn't actually end. So it's good that they switched it up for us.
Also, we'll be introduced to Mr. Agony and Mr. Ecstasy, a duo of serial killers slipping alongside the Corinthian's quarry, killing anyone in their path.
That's fairly interesting. That is definitely a way I'd want to swing into. If any of you have been keeping up with the magic side of DC Comics as of late, let us know what you think about that. Let us know what you think about, like, how the recent runs for Justice League Dark especially have gone there. I have my own opinions on those. I'd love to get back into reading the more up-to-date ones. I've gone back a little while just so I can keep up with what happened before, and even running through the whole Dark Knight's Metal bit. And it's just a really good, like, put together of teamed characters, especially those who have been so well established and have been just creatively progressed over the years in DC Comics.
Now, Miles, this is going to be an interesting one to get your thoughts on. Geoff Johns is returning to the world of Flashpoint in 2022 in a new limited series dubbed Flashpoint Beyond, along with co-writers Jeremy Adams, who worked on The Flash, Tim Sheridan, friend of the show. Johns will delve deeper into the world of Flashpoint and continue the story with their most tragic figure, of course, Thomas Wayne's Batman. Johns is teaming with Flashpoint Batman Night of Vengeance artist Eduardo Risso for Flashpoint Beyond #0. That'll focus on the Dark Knight and the circumstances surrounding his return to the Flashpoint reality. Of course, it was wiped out going into Justice League Incarnate. The Flashpoint reality just does not exist right now. So it'll be him going back to that reality. And from there, each issue will be a series that will feature, you know, different of the writers as Batman hunts for a mysterious villain known only as the Clockwork Killer. And that was brought to us by IGN.
Pretty reliable folk with that kind of information. I like that they delve into the world of comic books, you know. It's a pretty solid info, pretty solid referencing. They got a good rep for these kinds of things, so cool.
And what do you think of the idea itself of returning to the Flashpoint universe?
Well, I reckon they did about enough of it right about now, but it's not as though that each time they do it, it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, the one story in Batman where, you know, he had the tiff with his father in the Flashpoint universe, and there was a lot of emotional storytelling in the in-between of him dragging him around, and he finally gets his ass kicked by Bruce and, you know, taken off, and from there, it was just really awkward going forward, but it just kind of, well, I didn't feel emotionally settled, like, reading into it. I mean, I imagine the two had their closure, at least one of them had their closure somehow, but despite the storytelling, I could never really feel like that tale is finished. That kind of connection has me reeling as to where the whole Thomas Wayne thing is going, especially, as you said, with a universe that doesn't, I guess, technically exist.
Yeah, they'll be returning to it. Now, of course, you know why they're doing this. With The Flash supposed to be coming out this November.
Right.
Of course, you got to build up that Flashpoint IP.
And what better way to do it than with a character that's primarily outstanding and appearing in just various universes the most frequently? It would seem. Outside of Owlman, I'd like to think that I see him most.
You know, speaking of comics, especially ones that you're going to want to pick up if you can get your hands on this, it is going to be a very limited reprint. But in honor of the late, great George Perez, Marvel and DC are teaming up to do a limited run reprint of the Justice League of America Avengers miniseries.
So is this going to be just a generic, like, a reprint? Like, they're just going to reprint that specific story?
Yeah,
like
a reprint of his original JLA Avengers story.
Well, that's nice, you know? I would love it either way if it was, like, the art style was redone, of course, but that just has, like, a nice familiar feel to it.
Oh, no, you cannot redo the art style. The art style in that story is so sentimental to the storytelling, how it changes as the reality gets warped to the different art styles. So you cannot update the art style for that book.
Well, I'm sure everybody would have their own renditions of it. They could at least try for it. If they were wanting to go in that direction, which clearly they just decided to go the route of reprinting the original, which still is pretty appreciated. Now the story will be like easily available to any reader, new or old otherwise. So that's a lot of fun.
And on an unfortunate side of the news, when it comes to the books, former DC editor Brian Augustin has unfortunately passed away. He was the sole writer for Gotham by Gaslight. He also did things like JLA Year One. He did The Search for Ray Palmer, as well as he was the editor in charge when they put out Detective Comics Annual Number 2 in 1988, where Batman took on the KKK.
That's absolutely astronomical. And surprisingly enough, the one that interests me most was The Search for Ray Palmer. I absolutely adored that story, Eric.
And of course, we here on the show also reviewed Gotham by Gaslight.
It was a fun movie. I loved it a lot.
And now, folks, if you're into movie and TV news for what's coming down the pike, hold on to your butts.
There's quite a bit of stuff going on. One of my favorite things was just recent news that came up and about. Of course, I imagine anyone and everyone has seen Peacemaker right about now. It's been an absolutely fantastic show.
It really has. A lot of fun. Some great references and deep cuts, like Matter Eater Lad, Batmite.
even just the sheer Dull shit Man. Talking. Yeah, Dull Man especially. I thought that was really cool that they just took such obscurity and threw it in there. So now these random factoids and little Easter eggs and shit are just being tossed out there for new fans to enjoy and shit.
But of course, they did get picked up for a season 2, as well as James Gunn is developing a second spinoff show from the Suicide Squad. They're not saying who's involved with that project.
Just that the process is he's taking alternative characters and making spinoff shows about them.
That's right. But, you know, a Peacemaker season 2 series, if they want to keep with, the Charlton references and Easter eggs, that just gives us more hope of the Question showing up in live action, played by Rainn Wilson, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. They would have to have just, assorted hero appearances, even if they're goofy C-level shit. Any given member of the past Suicide Squad could be on a fucking mission, and then all of a sudden, Bwana Beast fucking appears out of nowhere. Well, lo and behold, it's Dr. Polaris, and he throws a fucking car at him. What's he gonna do? Tell the squirrels, hey, man, car's hurt.
Now, see, what I thought a fun idea for a new show would be, set it right after the first Suicide Squad film, and have the show be about Rick Flagg and Amanda Waller's time running Bell Rev Prison. Make it a mix between Orange is the New Black.
Right.
Prison Break, things of that nature. Take all those as influences and set a prison style show inside Bell Rev.
You know, you could make a use of non-meta villains that are well renowned in Marvel Comics, especially the ones based in New York. And you could make good storylines off of that. I know they've done so in the past in Marvel Comics cartoons. Primarily the Spectacular Spider-Man was one of them. And even those without powers, it was just a lot of fun to see that episode. There was a school play aspect in it, but primarily this whole prison break thing. It was just so vibrant, and it was really well told. So that kind of shit, that flies well. That flies well.
Greg Berlanti is working on a secret DC project with one Jensen Eccles. They're not saying who the project is for, however.
Well, Jensen Eccles has the look of a couple different DC characters and, anyone's opinion. So, any strong guesses, any ideas that you might have that he may be, most suited for?
I'm not sure, but that does transition me for one idea into our next piece of news.
Oh, he was already Red Hood. There's that idea.
Yeah. That will tie into something soon, however, on here.
Oh, my.
However, Jimmy Palmiotti wants to do a Jonah Hex HBO Max miniseries.
I feel like that should have been something that should have been done first before the movie that they came out with.
The movie that shall not be discussed?
What movie that shall not be discussed?
Exactly. but also in, you mentioned Red Hood. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention how the Gotham Knights television series has been ordered to pilot. They are currently casting right now. And they'll be shooting in Toronto.
Really? That's fairly interesting. And so for those of you who may be denizens of Toronto, Ontario, or maybe passing through, or maybe even some of us in the Hamilton area as well, who we don't know, we'll probably still end up seeing additional equipment for the show. Like we have in the past, of course, previous episodes ago, we made mention of how I saw GCPD cruisers down at, I think it was called Summers Lane in Hamilton, Ontario. I didn't grab a picture of them, but shit, yeah, they were there. And, well, you can tell that they were in Hamilton by some of the scenes.
Oh, yeah, the GCPD building was Mohawk College.
Exactly.
Yeah, they are currently looking for a Dick Grayson. They've announced that they're casting for Harper Row and Stephanie Brown.
I think it's a fairly interesting idea that they choose to include these names after so long, especially in live-action renditions. Do you think that they'll actually utilize Stephanie Brown's history, as Clue Master's daughter, that to introduce her?
I think they will, because they want to differentiate themselves from Titans.
And again, it goes back to how cool and how strong it can actually be to use non-meta-related villains. So that's, yeah, okay. I can agree with that, too. I think it's a good idea.
And, you know, speaking of Titans, Season 4's casting is underway. Joseph Morgan joins the cast as Brother Blood. Frank Potenta has joined as Mother Franka Potenta has joined as Mother Mayhem. And Lisa Ambavlinar has joined as Jinx.
Very intriguing lineup. Good selection, however. Brother Blood is something I feel that should have been done, like, in the beginning. He's just...
Shot has given me a look from the corner of the room.
He's just that villain for the Titans, you know? The whole Blood cult and everything. Brother Blood has been, like, a staple in Titans history for so long. So I'm, at the very least, glad that they're finally including him in the series. Jinx as well. Very powerful presence, given her relationship with the Titans in comics, in
with Brother Blood, cartoon. You can do a whole dark magic angle with her, like goth dark magician.
Yeah, it's insane. You know, they've tackled quite a bit of magic stuff already. So being able to express more enthusiasm into it, more exciting factors rather. It's so cool. There's no limit to what can be done. How they could possibly reutilize a Trigon as well. How they could reutilize other magical aspects of the DC universe that may be in supporting roles to utilizing Brother Blood. There's a bunch of different ways you can go, especially in regards to classic Teen Titans referencing. They've done such a good job so far with the likes of Deathstroke. They've done fantastic in season one in the development of Raven, the whole telling of the tale of Dick Grayson. It's been such a fun ride with this show.
Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, of course, is developing a project for DC Comics with Christopher Priest known as Zero, X-E-R-O.
That's pretty interesting stuff. I'm very, very intrigued that he decided to take this kind of route. So many celebrities you don't expect, you know, just to so all of a sudden openly support comics and you know, fictional tale telling, in which case isn't a bad thing whatsoever, I guess.
Back to TV news. We'll ping it back over there. Justice U is in the works for the CW with David Ramsey set to return as John Diggle. This series will follow Dig as he recruits 5 young metahumans to live undercover at university as he trains them to become the heroes of tomorrow.
So it's pretty much live action My Hero Academia.
Yes. Mm-hmm. With Diggle and what we're assuming is going to be 5 original characters.
My Hero Academia, in case any of you don't know for any reason, is just like a dimmed
anime
down,
X-Men.
Yeah, anime X-Men. It's exciting. And, like, there's a lot of cool characters on it. I can't really talk down about the anime entirely, so it's a fun watch. If you haven't seen it and you like anime, it's definitely one I would recommend. Same with reading it. The storytelling's really cool.
Now, they'll have a chance here to really dive into DC Comics and pick any 5 fucking characters they want, but it's the CW, and with the trends that they've been going with Legends of Tomorrow, I could see them just creating a bunch of new characters for themselves.
I'm kind of worried to see where that would go.
As am I. However, I bring up Legends of Tomorrow, and I'll get to that one in a minute, because I've got one other thing, because we have to take form of a movie first.
Oh.
Black Adam writer Adam Skitzel has gotten a Wonder Twins movie ordered for HBO Max. He will write and direct it.
Okay. What is it that he's doing?
He is writing and directing a Wonder Twins movie.
That would explain the relevance of the thing you did earlier. Okay. That's clever. Well, that is a good form, at least. You know, I was kind of wondering when something big like that was going to come along for the Wonder Twins.
I can see it being a really good comedy if you want to set, you know, use them as the background characters they are, the interns for the Hall of Justice.
I hate to say it, but my favorite rendition of them was in Justice League Unlimited, when they were part of that little power pack of, like, super-powered teen clones referencing, like, classic, like, 70s
Super Like Friends Apache heroes. Chief, and, yeah.
Granted, they then use a, mul- like mass produced clones to invade their space station, the fucking Watchtower. And that was probably the coolest episode of just generic Justice League violence I've seen. And then they went into Justice League Unlimited, the second season, where they did the whole thing where the villains fought each other, like for Luthor, for Grodd, for leadership of the Legion of Doom. It was interesting to say the least, but I kind of felt weird seeing a cut and paste thing like that. But even still, it's heroes versus technical heroes and villains versus villains. So it's fun for me either way.
Well, speaking of fun, the Leslie Grace Batgirl suit has popped up online, and it is the perfect rendition of the Year One Batgirl by Burnside.
Okay, that's good. It's modern, it's relevant.
And not only that, but actress Ivory Aquino has been confirmed to be playing Alicia Yeo in the film.
Ooh, okay. All right, I'm down for that. Apparently there's been a bit of shit going about that at Batfleck is going to be the Batman of that movie.
No,
Michael Keaton's been on there.
He's been on set. There's pictures of him. He's got the old bat suit with the yellow logo.
That's for the like Batgirl movie. Or more.
Yeah. Oh,
that's fantastic. I've seen some shit about that Batfleck would have been the one being put in that position. And I wanted to double check on that.
Michael Keaton has been shown on set. The photos have come out. There's been set art. Yeah, interviews he's done for it now.
Fantastic.
There's been set artwork that's been shown that shows Robin will be making an appearance. We've talked about that on the show in the past.
Actually fantastic. And they even made mention earlier on as well that there's an actual like wrestler that calls himself Damian Wayne, and I think that's the coolest thing.
Well, Mize, I'm going to read this character description for you.
Okay.
Because Donald Faison of Scrubs has been cast in a role for Legends of Tomorrow.
All right. The one that was the professor, right?
He was going to be the professor on Powerpuff Girls, yes.
Turk.
Ah.
Turk has been cast for Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay.
Now, they put out a character description, but they didn't say who he's playing.
Is it me?
I know who he's playing.
It's pretty obvious who he's playing.
Ah, it's me.
It's not you.
Damn it.
You're not black.
You sure?
Well,
the skin color has nothing to do with the character description either.
She's right. I'm not black, though. Might be.
Well, the Legends first encounter this character at a different phase of his career whose golden years are in the rearview mirror. He's a good guy deep down. His ego's looking for a boost that only fame, fortune, and glory can provide. While he claims to have been recruited to work for a mysterious time organization, he wasn't offered much of a choice in the matter. As an unauthorized time traveler with high-profile aspirations, he developed a mischievous streak and cut a few corners along the way to achieve his dreams. He knows all about the Legends of Tomorrow and finds them inspiring, because they are the kind of heroes who started on the ground floor, as opposed to inheriting their powers from an alien planet, a spider bite, or wealthy parents. But the big question is to whether his respect for the team is going to help the Legends out of hot water, or get them into hotter water. Mize, who do you think Turk is playing?
I'm going to say my technical answer would be, well, it's not the Wannabeast, and I would technically be right. But to actually be right, I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's Booster Gold.
That is what it looks like by all accounts. There's online rumors and murmurings going that Zach Braff is doing the voice of Skeets.
Oh, I like it. I like it. This is good news indeed.
Wait, so you're telling me Turk and his brother
are his friend. Yes, are apparently doing Booster and Skeets.
Incredible.
Which, of course, that was also a CW show.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, NBC and then a CW, I
think. When are they giving us Vixen back? I want more Vixen.
They did announce a comic book where DC Legends Comics, in one of the issues, it's all of the old Legends of Tomorrow getting back together for one last mission.
Oh.
Like the Atom, Hawkman, of them got to come together because of something that happens like Heatwave's daughter.
That'll be spicy.
And the last piece of news I have on here, I didn't know we had to cover the motherfucking Olympics on this podcast.
What's that?
Because the Germany dual figure skaters came out as Joker from Suicide Squad and Harley Quinn from Birds of Prey for their team rhythmic dance. They used the songs Spirit in the Sky, Seven Nation Army, and Toxic. They came in last place out of 10 with an overall score of 63.21.
Now, when you say Suicide Squad Joker, you mean the Jared Leto one,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's what you get, you fuck.
And I think they got last place because he snapped her neck and she fell on the ground.
Yeah. Dude, I will show you the whole routine in between.
He snaps her neck and she falls.
Couldn't even spring for the purple fucking suit. Fuck you, buddy.
Actually, he did have the suit on.
Do you have the Mark Hamill one?
No, he had like a purple.
He needs the Mark Hamill style one. And that's the Joker suit.
The girl was wearing the exact outfit she was wearing.
Yeah, she had the Birds of Prey like Harley poncho.
And she had the jacket that she took off at the beginning.
Yeah.
Harley's fashion is very eccentric in general, so, you know, that's sticking fairly well to the character itself.
And even her hair was red and blue at the tips.
Yeah, even her hair had the red and blue.
Confound it. Well, it's exciting to say the least, though, you know. You don't see that kind of thing done in, you know, actual Olympic sports. So I'd still give it, like, a thumbs up that they were able to just, you know, kind of gear towards something a little more vibrant than usual.
It was good. I liked it.
Yeah, for what it was, it looked very high school. But like I said, as soon as we cut to commercial, I'll pull it up and show it to you here, Mize.
That sounds pretty cool.
So that is it I've got for news. Was there anything that stood out, Mize, that you've got for us?
Well, with the announcement of the additional Peacemaker seasons coming up, I'm pretty excited thinking about where they could run with that, who they could include in addition to what they've already done with various existing characters. Especially Vigilante. That was an odd one. The White Dragon thing was an odd one, but it hit different. I can only imagine where else they could actually go from here. What's going to be in store for Amanda Waller in the coming projects from DC Comics, whether they're headed for HBO Max, whether they're headed for the big screen, whatever the case may be, leading for these more obscure characters in the Justice League. And in which case, if you happen to watch every part of Peacemaker, and you, come on, who hasn't? In this case, seeing them at the end of the series was just phenomenal. And certain ones appearing for obvious reasons. I still thought it funny that the ones that showed up made such a big impact on the series progression, especially given, again, the more obscure storytelling with, like, even more obscure characters, and it's made it so mainstream. I thought that the movie, the newer Suicide Squad, has just done absolute wonders for these characters.
Now, is there any characters in particular, say from the C or D list, that you would want to see pop up?
Well, there's quite a few, but some of them
just
have
two off the top of your head.
Well, I would say, you know what, Hive would be a really good idea to throw in there. You'd throw in the likes of Mammoth. Who else can you throw in there? You can throw in various mercenaries as well. You can use the likes of fucking the Electrocutioner. I think that's pretty neat. You know, you could just have a kind of a comedic bit with that. Well, there's also that, I think they're called a Cobra or some shit like that.
Oh, God.
That snake, that Serpent Society or some shit like that that they got going on.
What about you, Sean? Is there any characters that you want to see pop up in any of these series in the future?
No.
No? Oh. You don't want to see anyone show up?
Not really.
I want to
see. Into,
was it too jokey for you, or?
I don't know. I just didn't enjoy it.
I want to see Sportsmaster in that. and Peacemaker.
Oh, they're using him on Stargirl, though.
That's completely understandable. But there's already been, like, multiverses established, and I can't see why they don't, you know, utilize that same form of character. I think it'd be a pretty neat idea just to see different bits and pieces of different parts of the multiverse that they still utilize so heavily.
So that is it for what we've got for news. What do you say we cut to what will sound like a sound effect for the people, but for us will be overnight. When we come back, we will talk about Catwoman Hunted.
It sounds like a pretty good idea. I'm totally down for that.
Perfect. It doesn't, no, but as we were saying, now that we've actually got things rolling here, we were just saying to Mize, we were about to watch Catwoman Hunted. Mize, Batwoman in Catwoman Hunted, she is voiced by none other than Stephanie Beatriz, Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
That's actually pretty huge. I was pretty taken back by it when he was first starting to mention it. And the character inclusion in Catwoman Hunted is going to be absolutely phenomenal. So I can't wait to see her performance as the Lady of the Night herself.
Have you heard... Well, that just makes her sound like a hooker.
Well, I don't know what else to call her. I can't call her the Dark Knight because they already got that covered.
Did you just say that Catwoman wasn't a hooker?
I thought we were talking about Rosa Diaz and
Rosa. Okay, I thought you meant like Catwoman. And I'm like,
oh, if they're hookers, I'll pay. That's fine. Hooker. Like, the whole costume thing just kind of cinches it in, you know, and very pretty ladies, and absolutely. But no, it's definitely going to be exciting seeing both vigilantes take part in their own creative little story here. It's definitely like seeing an animated feature for one-shots kind of feel, you know? It's good to have them sometimes.
Have you seen Stephanie do work outside of Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Her voice will throw you off.
Completely understandable. You know, a lot of voice actors that have done live action roles to have that voice, have that look overall that throws anybody off. You'd be more surprised than anything, you know, seeing various people in certain shows only to find out that aside from the small supporting role, they actually have a huge influence on the animated world, kids shows, you know, Cartoon Network, like moderate audience kind of stuff. It's just a fun little factoids you learn along the way is part of what makes this so exciting.
And in that, we get our opening titles, and they're both got some Japanese subtitling beneath them, both the Warner Brothers and DC logos.
I'm totally down for that House of the Rising Sun anime appeal. You know, it's got, like, just a nice aesthetic going into the DC logo. It's very unique than just a straightforward, like, these are the heroes, this is the logo. Now we're on just a path to, like, generic storytelling for superheroes. This is just a kind of peacefully, a very, very tranquil introduction as to who's presenting us with this. And plus, one of the characters looks like a smiley face. And it's just overall impressive.
And of course, go back to our Batman Ninja to hear my thoughts on anime. And we'll be back in a quick second as we start to watch this film. That was cool.
It really was. For anime fans, the best way to describe this opening was a nice cross-up between Cowboy Bebop, a smidge bit of a Space Dandy kind of feel, just how colorful it was, and primarily like a Bakano, given the just kind of time frame or overall environmental scheme that this went with. It was very, very jazzy, very chill. I guess like a golden age lo-fi would be.
Yeah, I was going to say instead of going for an anime reference, to go for a comic book reference, it's got more of like a 70s noir pulp comic. Even some influences from Human Target Run, which is happening now, all in those art styles as well.
Yeah, jazzy clubs were a huge thing out in the 70s, so that would have been a swell way to put it. Just that kind of like Private Eye, kind of like Dick Tracy-ish kind of theme. Be a
shout out to Steve the Tramp from Dick Tracy.
What up, Steve?
All right, so we are in Spain, and we are at some swanky-ass home where it appears there's a mix between a masquerade and a superhero cosplay party going on. You see people dressed up as Supergirl. You see someone who's got his Hal Jordan and Alan Scott's mixed up because he's got the new Green Lantern Corps shirt on, but he's got a big old cape going with it.
Probably just his attempt at like a tourist Halloween costume. Arrived late to the party and was just like, fuck it, this whole thing will do. But aside from that gaudy little getup, everyone else was pretty spot on with a lot of their costumery. The festivities were wild and packing, and there was a party of arriving gentlemen that were also packing.
Yo, yeah, and they were looking mid too. This crew shows up in a limo, matching suits, all white attire, got the little all white domino masks going on. They are looking fly for this party. But they just happen to roll their head into the limo and go, hey, boss, everything's clear.
Using the fresh references off the 60s Batman and the 90s Batman in the intro, and then going directly into this goofy, generic, kind of tacky anime appeal kind of sat hilariously with me up until they did the big reveal for the boss man in the limo, which was the Black Mask. And he came out and his face didn't move for him talking or anything, which is understandable in certain aspects of Black Mask. But given how sharp the mask looked, I thought, oh man, this is just going to be like so bland. But it turns out there's a lot more detail to it, but nothing that oversimplifies and nothing that superbly complicates his image or anything. It just kind of matches with the black and white aesthetic that he seems to have going on, especially with his henchmen. Going into this party, it's bound to be a banger. It normally is when mobsters from any country happen to invade the party.
All right, so as our group of fly guys is pulling up, walking in, another car pulls up. It's got a nice little shade of purple to it. Out steps a nice pair of long legs with a purple dress, a green cape, and we move up to a nice little rounded cowl of someone doing a picture-perfect first appearance Catwoman cosplay.
It had that masquerade feel when she debuted in it, and the use of it right now is actually so befitting of the aesthetic that's going on. And the banter exchange between the two upon her arrival was just fantastic, especially with the valet just beforehand. He about creamed his goddamn shorts that a woman of that caliber got that close to him. Like, it just throws out there how much more pimp Batman can possibly be if he could withstand being in front of a woman like Selina Kyle without straight up boner alert right off the bat. It's super incredible where this is leading up to right now, especially since after their little bit of back and forth, they went arm in arm and joined each other in the festivities. So it makes you wonder where this is going to be heading to.
All right, well, we're walking through the party. We did get a list of names that some of the guests are dressed up as.
So there are
Shockwave or whatever his name is.
There are quite a few people at this party here. All of them, of course, dressed for the occasion. Some of them dressed in familiar faces. Some of these faces include the likes of the Joker, Harley Quinn, Black Lightning, the Riddler. We're on the fence on whether it could be Punch from Punch and Julie or if it would be the classic Alan Scott Green Lantern villain, the Harlequin. Zatanna is one of the characters they dress up as. There's a Batman in there. Tobias Wayne.
No, sir. No. It is not Batman. We had to pause the movie ourselves because of this Batman. He is a short, very round Batman. It looks like what would happen if Mize was freshly shaved and went in a Batman suit in this party, and this background character was so distracting that we did not notice Tobias Whale front and center.
Then the food is probably the best food on the planet, because I remember seeing somebody else dressed up as Batman earlier on, and this guy wound up in the main room before all the main characters did, just out of the blue, but he was walking away from the building, and now he's just all of a sudden back in there like they put out the fresh shrimp. Shrimp is justice.
Well, who else is at the party, Mize?
Well, for what we noticed afterwards, the actual man himself, Tobias Whale, was there because we were so distracted by the invigorating handsomeness of Bat-Mize. There's also a lady dressed up as Supergirl, Wonder Woman as well, and somebody even went as far as to do the 1989, I think it was 1989, or was it just early 90s when they did Batman Returns? Can't remember if they were done like the same year stretch.
No, Batman Returns was in the 90s.
It is in the 90s. All right. So roughly around the same time frame is why I got mixed up. But yeah, in the 90s, when Batman Returns was done, somebody did an homage to the Danny DeVito Penguin. I gotta watch Batman Returns again. You know, I appreciate it enough to watch it like once a year. You'd think that, you know, I'd probably memorize, you know, the statistics of the shit. That's my beat. But either way, those are a lot of the characters that people are dressed up as. And going into the party, as they're greeted by Tobias Whale, gangsters do as gangsters do. And they whip out their guns and they're about ready to, you know, blow holes in Tobias Whale. But they are there on business. They're there to meet the hostess that has actually hired on Tobias Whale to be part of the staff there. Pretty interesting shit, and could be something to do with the ranks of possibly Leviathan, whose name was mentioned earlier on in the credits. Pretty cool stuff, pretty big stuff. It makes me think that there's going to be a strong presence for Talia al Ghul, probably the primary face of Leviathan for this. I mean, she is in the books. So,
let's
continue on and see where she's at in all this.
All right, so just right quick, we get introduced to the head of Leviathan. It's not Talia al Ghul. They threw us for a swerve. It's Barbara fucking Minerva, the cheetah.
I feel dirty. I feel very dirty.
Shauna, how do you feel? All right, so Selena flirts her way through the dance floor, hits on Fat Mize.
Yeah.
Hits on an old lady for her jewelry, and then hits on the guest that we are debating is either just dressed as maid wearing domino mask or laziest black canary masquerade.
Selena Kyle flirted with me. I'm pretty much a fucking celebrity now. This is fucking wild.
Mize, congratulations on the clap. From there, we see that a cat is setting off the motion detectors for security. So they decide what any good security guards do at a multi-million dollar supervillain party. We're going to turn off the motion detectors for the security system.
Just so the alarm won't be as much of an inconvenience as a cat setting them off. Because, you know, none of you guys can just continuously go up there and shoo her off and maintain the safety of the perimeter or anything. That's clearly not why you're being paid thousands of dollars.
They're just going to have to do that like 20 times a night, though. So why not just turn it off? Because you're just going to go out there every 2 minutes trying to get that cat out of there.
Just push the button and reset the alarm every time. They're being paid good money.
Yes, but how long does it take to reset? And how long can she sneak in before the alarm is reset? So either way, they're fucked.
What kind of security system has a snooze button? Holy crap. Oh, these people are terrible.
Terrible.
It's just rich awful. People. What do you expect?
Plain ass awful. Well, the riches are all stored into the safe. It was discussed earlier on that for joining the Leviathan that there'd be a fee having to be paid, and all of their assets they brought with them to pay them with would have to be stored, and that they're going to be making a venture of some kind, one which we'll find out shortly, I would imagine. We get our nice little change-away montage for Catwoman going into the suit, and it's kind of hilarious. One of the primary villains, last name is Minerva. And the
cheetah.
Yeah, the cheetah and Catwoman's head after putting on the suit. She looks like an owl. All
right, so that was a fun little sequence of Catwoman breaking in, basically just owning their horrible, horrible security system left, right, and center.
Oh, Leviathan's hot garbage.
Looping their footage. Security guards are reading newspapers. Their vault is the simplest thing. She just puts her ear on it and just plays with the dial for half a second. Our locks in high school were more secure than that.
It's like setting your password as password. Oh, man. It's just so tacky.
Guessed.
So she got in, she pulled out the old powder and pad, and she's all about doing the whole girl's accessorizing lines and a spy gig. Very Charlie's Angelish.
Who's she quipping to?
You know, I'm guessing she's practicing for when she gets back to Gotham, so that way when she goes for the bat dick and she gets all flustered and she's like, shit, I had something for this, and completely forgets whatever it is she was doing on the adventure. But luckily for us, we managed to catch firsthand what it was she was up to. She managed to reveal a very, very tight security laser grid, and it was guarding a emerald stone called the Cat's Eye Diamond, I guess, and... Or the Cat's Eye Emerald, excuse me, not Diamond. The Cat's Eye Emerald. And she did this fantastic little number of going up to the ceiling, crawling across like you would in Arkham, like the Arkham games, of course. And then she started doing this whole gymnast thing. And as AJ pointed out as we were watching it there, her whip is too loose on her figure once she brings it back up and puts it on her body. Yeah, it looks like a cat's tail and all that jazz, but come on, let's be fucking real here.
It's touching a laser.
It's solid matter. If it touches that laser, she's fucking done for. Like, that was pure luck, either that, or those, like, square openings are far too big. And that's why she could do all those fucking funny flips and acrobatic jazzes.
Well, either way, she gets down, gets to the Emerald, and pulls out a little waving kitty that puts in its place. And as she's about to get away, a motherfucking batarang lands in front of her.
I thought it was going to be Indiana Jones for a second, and he was just going to be all like, that belongs in a museum.
It was just Hal Jordan with a green cape.
The Green Lantern guy went completely overboard instead of just simply, you know, sticking with the cheesy part of it. Now he looks even cornier. And look, they gave, for some reason, they gave Superman a fucking rapier. Look out, everybody. The Man of Steel's got a fucking saber on him. They gave Wonder Woman a warrior sword, which is pretty badass, because there was a whole scene there where the batarang that got her caught wound up, got her in the middle of...
the party.
Yeah, the party. The hall they were holding, the gathering. And they got back out. Barbara Minerva's like, oh, shit, no. A fucking Catwoman. This ain't happening. And she screams for the henchmen to do their job. Tobias Whale is a deer in fucking headlights until he starts screaming now after she screams at him. And the just transition was absolutely hilarious. The whole time, the guy dressed like the Joker has been smiling. So he's sticking to the shtick. Bravo to him.
Yo, check out the shiv that Riddler's got.
This guy is packing like major heat. I don't know if he's come to fucking spread butter or fucking shiv a kidney.
Alright, so we have a big fight scene ensue. Everyone tries to kill Catwoman. Literal rockets are flying, Tommy guns being shot.
The amount of people coming at her as opposed to just simply the one-on-one fashion is absolutely fantastic. There's still, like, the one person at a time coming at her and everything, but it's a nice equivalent toss-up there. Really showcasing the stylings of Selina Kyle in a much more action-packed environment, as opposed to the stealthy aspects we're normally used to her being surrounded by. So, with everybody trying to kill her, she's making her way out. And she's cutting the same lines as she has been in the movie, like, quite frequently, like that, oh, wow, this is very nice, you're not careful, I might steal it away, and she's been doing it the whole goddamn time she's been at the party, and even when she's leaving, she was doing it, which is just absolute goofiness, but the Goof Troop goofiness level movie award goes to fucking Selina Kyle for inheriting the brain of fucking Daphne and saying, oh yeah, by the way, if you're ever wondering who it is that's fucking your day up here, it's Selina Kyle. With a capital, this is my real fucking name in a big room of people who want to fucking kill her. What the shit?
Oh, genius. Awesome car chase sequence.
Yeah, the entirety of that chase was pretty action-packed. I found that some parts of it were dragged out between, like, how long there actually was, like, straight road and capability to understand them completely for such long periods of sentences and quips. But the action, the animation...
Their stretch of road went almost as long as a Mize semi-tangent sentence.
They're pretty semi-tangent, and they are pretty long. And that was a long stretch of Mize tangent. Like, they were down, they were full tangent.
You know, Selina does get away from Tobias Whale. All of his goons are pretty much dead or in a car crash now.
Some of them most definitely dead.
Yeah. It looks like Selina's going to get away when she is caught up to by Rosa, the Batwoman.
It was just Rosa in a Batman costume.
What was that, Shauna?
Why does he look like a 15-year-old boy but sound like a 50-year-old man?
Anime!
It sounds horrible. No.
That will always be the case for anime. 17-year-olds will be built like fucking oxes. 30-year-olds will be skinny dudes you expect to be in high school. The whole anime aspect is confusing.
They do that with TV shows, too, but at least it's not like...
Back in the 80s, you mean?
Like... It's not like I've heard
Luke Perry back in high school type shit.
Yeah, or like nowadays where the Riverdale kids are supposed to be high school students, but they're all in their 30s.
Oh, I guess every actor gets held back a year. Wink.
Or 10.
Well, Catwoman wakes up in some pretty swank accommodations. Maybe it looks like a sex dungeon of the Umbrella Academy.
After... Oh, it's totally the sex dungeon. It is Klaus's bedroom.
After being entirely annihilated in that car scheme and against Batwoman, being dragged off by her and leaving behind the diamond for Tobias Whale of all people Emerald. To pick up. Oh, yeah, the diamond and Emerald. God dang it, I'm so used to thieves going after diamonds, and now they're going after Emerald. It's not even kryptonite. Stop confusing me, DC Comics. You're making me look funny. I already look funny, but you don't need to exaggerate on it. At any rate.
She wakes up on this plane. Turns out plane used to be owned by the Penguin, hence the swanky accommodations and umbrella motif.
They confiscated it. They stole the criminal's Klaus's. Property.
Well, it was Klaus's, then Penguin bought it. Well, either way, they're going to be joined on their mission by Julia Pennyworth and King Faraday.
I thought that was pretty cool that they brought in King Faraday for this kind of thing. I enjoyed seeing him ever since I actually first was introduced to him watching the Justice League Unlimited cartoons. So seeing him in more shit now, especially this, 2022, the year of the Faraday, baby.
Now, I can't be sure because I haven't looked up the credits yet, but he sounds a lot like Commander William T. Riker.
He does. Quite a few different characters sound rather familiar.
We, of course, will do a deep dive on the credits, maybe towards the credits or whatever Shauna feels like grabbing her tablet.
I don't have a tablet right now.
Okay, her tablet's charging. We'll get to that at some point. For now, back to the skies.
Well, that was actually fun. A little bit on the plane there where they're just kind of enjoying the scenery inside the plane, which is still, you know, very swanky piece of technology. And they're talking about Selena's rep, the situation they're in, what it has to do with her. And it's, of course, you know, a criminal scheme, you know, done by the good guys to make it seem like it's for the greater good, whatever. But either way, these amenities keep poking and prodding at various...
Phrasing.
Yeah, phrasing especially is poking and prodding at varying at promiscuity, I guess, would be the best way to put it. Because, I gotta tell you...
Mize is being subtle. Catwoman is fucking cock-teasing Batwoman this entire time.
Yeah, it's a big, like... It's probably the biggest fan service blue ball and bullshit you'll ever get from a DC animated feature. Whoever thought this was going to be a good idea clearly thought that teasing the population just hitting puberty now is a great way to advertise your comic book characters.
No, Mize. Whoever wrote this heard our old podcasts, realized how hard you were roasting Dick Grayson, and decided to do Kate one worse.
Yikes. I mean... At least Grayson ended up hooking up with some of the DC roster. Like, holy shit, poor Kate Bishop.
Why isn't she just with Julia?
Because Julia won't stop eating broccoli out of the soil. Not until she eats her green beans.
Alright, so Roman is voted into the New World Order.
By unanimous decision, based upon a generous glowing donation. Rock. Yes, generous donation of a glowing rock. The cat's eye thing.
Emerald.
Yeah, emerald. Bang. That's it?
Yeah.
They took emerald? Oh no, that thing's gonna bang.
Well, they took him.
Oh.
And now, Roman goes through... Basically, a bunch of nobody mob leaders from around the world. Mr. Yakuza.
Holy fuck, was that guy ever cringy as shit. Jesus Christ.
Like, oh, these people are going to take it out so easily.
It's so stereotypical, but a lot of the different names really stuck in there. The one that really spoke out was the last one that was introduced. It was Moxie Mannheim. And as a lot of these Superman fans may be aware, Mannheim is a familiarized name with the villain affiliation known as Inner Gang.
Which they did bring up. He will be running Inner Gang for them as well.
That's absolute madness. The crime lords of Gotham and Metropolis confronting one another. A guy of the Eastern Seaboard and another dude dealing in interstellar arms trades. It's huge.
Huge. So we're thrown for a swerve. Help has been called in for Leviathan. Catwoman and Batwoman are up on the plane. Only Batman is allowed to call Selina Cat, we find out. She takes a fit about it. Told basically you can go down there or we can throw you down there pretty much. Catwoman decides, you know, I'm going to play ball, head down there. Does go down there a little too eagerly, they find. However, they do have a card in the hole to keep Selina playing nice. Isis the Cat stayed behind on the plane. So she gets down there, and it turns out that the help that Leviathan has called in is none other than Cheshire.
Pretty cool choice of character for this one. I half expected that Lady Shiva to be the one. Even Katana would have been a pretty nifty choice, but it's nice to see a deeper dive into obscurity, especially since she's gotten a lot more popularity in the Young Justice cartoon. So under any and every circumstance that she's been able to be used as of late, I think it stems right back to that. And I'm just happy to see this level of character being utilized in this film so far. It's a lot of fun.
All right, so we got a fight scene between Catwoman and Cheshire, including where Cheshire tries to cut her with some like Wolverine Vega claws from Street Fighter. They got some jellyfish toxin on them, but Catwoman has built up her immunity since last time. Wahaha.
Hanging around the bat.
So the fight keeps going until Cheshire's got the upper hand. Then Batwoman swoops in for the save, only because Isis has been a little shitbag on the plane.
Now it's time for Isis to save the day. What up?
It is now time for a 3-on-1 as Catwoman, Isis, and Batwoman are about to fight Cheshire. Isis says, fuck that, and just walks off.
Such a clever kitty.
And then what at first I thought was Damona from Gargoyles with a new peach color scheme shows up. She's calling herself Nosferatu, or Nosferata.
Yeah, Nosferata. Pretty clever name, given the appeal, you know, a giant bat lady. It's supposed to be like a vampire bat or some shit. But still, it matches up the bat and cat against the cat and bat aesthetic. So there was always that. The theme matched up fairly well. The cats went against each other. The bats went against each other. And each of the scenes they were in, both were respectively fantastic, especially leading back up to an encounter between them, only to land hard and noticeably back into the headquarters of where Leviathan was all meeting. So them being snide about it kind of led its path a little bit in the right direction. Like they'd had it on the button and their time was just really unlucky. And now that they've fallen into the belly of the beast, it's going to be even more dangerous for them.
I just want to start off by saying, fuck you, anime.
Oh man, this was the absolute best ever. No. I mean, Mannheim is just fucking genius. Holy shit.
So, the movie has been just, you know, slightly anime stylized throughout this entire thing, keeping a nice grounded story.
Slightly.
You know, a nice grounded story with a couple of street level heroes up until this fucking point. They clear out Black Mask's goons, including trying to use what is Operation Human Shield. Black Mask just shoots the guy instead. They're like, yo, why don't you other bad guys try helping? So Mr. Yakuza is like, okay, you guys with the swords get in there. And then it happens. Mannheim reaches for his belt buckle and pushes on it starting a glowing Dark Side Omega logo.
Which is where a good portion of Inner Gang's technology comes from.
It does come from Apocalypse, so that is at least a nice touch. However, he goes full Mega Man mech suit.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
What the fuck?
Is he Mannheim Man or Mox Man? Because if he's going full
Mega Mechheim. Man.
Oh, Mechheim. That would be pretty dim. Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. The greatest part about it is that after crashing in, they make cracks about how the marble floor stopped the villains, which were awesome. And when they were there, they just assumed, like, yeah, they're all like desk jockey piece of shit people when they're actually more than capable of defending themselves. They're like, bro, if you want to step, then great. And I love how prepared they all are for this. Because after they take down the henchmen, they're surrounded by fucking beasts and creatures summoned by a different manner of science and magic. Mannheim, of course, he fucking go-go fucking go-bot bullshit. And
yeah, yeah. After Mannheim, they start summoning motherfucking demons.
Like, this is the weirdest Scooby-Doo fucking bullshit I've ever seen.
It's completely gone off the rails.
Like, completely off the rails.
So we got our giant breakdown fight scene. Tobias Whale rips off his shirt. Motherfucker is shredded to a point that his nipples are gone.
Yeah, he legit like tears away at his wardrobe, and this man took the nipples with it. Like, for serious.
They did not animate nipples for this man.
No, he is so immense that if he had nipples, they would just auto-milk because the milk is afraid to be in them. That's how fucking enraged they are.
Lamadonna has Batwoman down in the corner. Demons are doing her exact wording. So Batwoman takes, I don't know, Spider-Man web pellets and throws it into the woman's mouth, meaning that she can no longer have control of her words, like chewing too much gum or peanut butter.
Yeah, she went full like dog with peanut butter in its mouth.
And Batwoman's just talking to the demons like, oh yeah, she says you can go home now.
So
they do.
Yeah. Goodbye to the summoned skull and gazelle, king of mythical beasts. They actually fell for it, and Batwoman went on to school her in magic, you know. Apparently the demons she summoned were just, you know, piddly little shits in comparison to actual high-level demons.
Fight keeps breaking down. The Chinese scientist, doctor, he just puts his hands up, gives up without a fight.
Well, he's got it in the test tubes, and well, if he can't test tube his way out, then he has no way out. So, smart move on his end, at least.
And Catwoman has kicked Tobias Whale right in the ding-ding, and we have a beached whale in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah, she was getting crushed by him for the longest while. She unveiled that she had, like, blades in her boots and just started, like, kick-jabbing him everywhere. We thought for a second that she was going to do the whole, like, knife-edge thing right in his berries, but that wasn't the right time for the berries, it would have seemed. Catwoman wound up getting out of it, taking the better of him, and Tobias still came on strong, and Catwoman warned him fairly until she, well...
buried
fucking,
him.
Yeah. Oh, man. Berry crunch.
Right in the other berry.
She cracked the whale's been beached line, and the fight's all over for the bad guys. It would seem all the bosses seem to have been apprehended.
Kicked them right in berry and in other berry.
Berry.
So we cut to Catwoman sitting at the Eiffel Tower. The whole thing has like a wrap-up to the movie feel.
It really did give that off at first. The adventure finished up, all the bad guys were arrested. Mannheim apparently didn't read the instruction manual on how to properly run his superpower awesome Japanese dark side mecha suits. All's well that ended well, or so we thought. We thought we were being given this nice, you know, closing speech, and all of a sudden it turned into a giant scene of ninjas surrounding her on the Eiffel Tower. You know, Catwoman's like all feeling calm and collected and secure and everything about the future of her and the girls back home in Gotham and doing what she does for them. And we're, you know, ninjas. It just comes out of nowhere with fucking ninjas.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, so they're going to do this whole thing where and Batwoman swoops in like, okay, we'll take out these ninjas together. you think they're going to go for the big punch together and then it'll fade away, setting up their next adventure or something. But no. They proceed to take on the entire clan of ninjas like they're Batman and the Green Arrow in the Brave and the Bold episode in the Prison Break. And the movie's going to keep going. They've got more story, apparently.
It would seem so. They've been keeping up with each other's count. I thought that was a fun little thing they've been doing as they were going back and forth with each other. And there's a chopper hanging above, just watching over all the transpirings down below. It's Barbara Minerva and what I guess remains of Leviathan up in the sky.
Random Grundy alert.
Yeah, they decide to send in the big guns. This giant package in the cargo hold withholds something. And,
giggity.
Yeah. I honestly thought it would have been something like a Mezo or some shit or some technological robot doodad that rich people buy, but apparently people are in the market for giant super-powered zombies.
Who isn't in the market for a giant super-powered zombie?
Preferably somebody wants to live, I guess. I mean, there's always the backfiring.
And if you need your super-powered zombie delivered today, you can hit me up at CloudyJ. We'll work out a deal. Speaking of deals, make sure to hit up our friends at Herb Approach.
Yeah, there's more than one place to get good jazz cabbage, but there's only one Herb Approach. And if you go visit them at herbapproach.org, then you can browse through numerous amounts of various flour, various amounts of other accessories, as well as other means of smoke or ingestion of marijuana or marijuana-like product. You can also check up on various articles they have on their webpage as well, you know, about the various uses of marijuana and just how it benefits everybody around the world. In which case, while you're there, you can do a little bit of light shopping, you know. First-time customers can get up to $25 off their first order, was it?
That's right.
That's huge stuff. And what's even cooler is that we have a promotion code you can use, and that's DCAR52. And you can get 10% off your next purchase. So stack that up. Go get yourself a fat sack, sit down, and get in front of that good animated shit. Oh, yeah.
Get yourself more smoked out than Solomon Grundy after 12 sticks of dynamite in his mouth.
Solomon Grundy's at least born on a Monday. But after a visit from Herb Approach, you'll still feel like you died on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. You'll be christened by Herb Approach by...
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And you'll be married to their product by Wednesday.
You will not get ill of it, nor will it get worse.
Nope.
However, by the end of your week, you smoke too much, you might want to be buried on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Oh my.
Yeah, it's a... Wow, that was a doozy of it. We got a hell of a last bit of a confrontation there. You know, Selena seems to have beaten all the odds, and then all of a sudden... you know, the grand boss lady makes her appearance. It was a hell of a show to get to that point, quite frankly. And the whole ride has been absolutely wild up until this point. And you figure that it's just going to be like a simple, maybe like a acrobatic thing going about there. No, they really went ahead and went full Dragon Ball Z with the transformation, the over-exaggerated fighting spots. It was kind of like Naruto style when Naruto and Sasuke went at it at the waterfalls way back in the early series. It was super colorful and super vibrant. And this fight was like ultra violent. And Selena's actions, just trying to be conservative, really showed the relatability and humanity going up against something so fervorous and just brutish, mind you. They really took Cheetah's appearance and went like full Sailor Moon bad guy on it.
Yeah, Barbara Minerva, the mob leader, goes Super Saiyan, I guess the term would be, and does a complete evolution, transformation, full Cheetah mode.
That's what the villain Frieza did in Dragon Ball Z, little white alien dude.
Sure.
Yeah, pretty hilarious.
I'll take your word for it. Full-on battle scene going. Batwoman is just able to make the save as they're both plummeting to their doom. They're on one of those high-rise cranes when a shot of lightning took them both out. However, Kate does not have the same save-everyone mindset that Bruce has.
No, especially not when it comes to the likes of the cheetah, who surely will live through this endeavor.
Oh, yeah. This is a cartoon. She's a cat. She'll land on her feet and run away.
Or she'll just fall to a pretty bad spot. She'll be injured, but she'll have that whole nine lives thing going for her because she's a cat lady, right?
Either that or she'll fall and be impaled through like 12 bars of rebar.
She's safe. She's good. Good.
No blood. No silhouette of death.
Yep. Absolutely nothing. Just total fucking, hey guys, I fell. You know what? I'm good. Just got to walk it off.
So they're getting Selena all wrapped up. They're putting two and two together that maybe Barbara was not the one in charge of the entire organization. And King Faraday has a theory on who it could be. Someone with ties to organized crime.
Oh.
International accomplices.
Yeah.
Has ties to the criminal underworld in every corner of the globe and unlimited resources.
Surely this can only be the work of one person.
Harley Quinn.
Must be. In all factuality, King Faraday couldn't be more wrong. After the fight had ended, with Chopper swirling about, contained the contents of one Talia al Ghul, who claimed to have been, ruling over things in the shadows. I'm super stoked about that, because I was hoping she was going to be ahead of this from the beginning there, and it turns out it was a good payoff for that.
Yo, not only that, but she says, like, I need another reason to hate Selena Kyle.
Yeah, because she hadn't had enough already, in which case, you know, the whole, like, hey, we slept with the same guy kind of shtick just kind of makes things awkward between us gals. And it's a pretty funny little spot there, but I can't wait to see how much further the Leviathan thing goes if they decide to press on with this anime version of the DC Universe.
So we'll let the background, the credit music play here in the background as we wrap up. A lot of fun. It all wraps up with Catwoman on her cruise ship, talking to Holly on the phone, going, you know what, we've got all the money we need to help these girls that Leviathan was trafficking. I'm just going to stop at the Tower in London and pick up a few things on the way home.
That was pretty fun, yeah. Nice little colorful ending going on there. Selena's still sticking to her vigilantism, you know, the influence of the Batman has really taken its course over Selena Kyle over the years, and this was a befitting ending for it. It was really well done. I think this movie was fantastic.
Yeah, a couple of pacing issues here and there, but overall a lot of fun and definitely highly recommended. Kudos to Greg Wiseman and all involved with this project. A sleeper hit, a lot of fun from it.
Definitely. And I just saw that Steve Blum was Solomon Grundy in this. That was a pretty interesting twist there.
And I was correct earlier. It was Jonathan Franks, of course, doing the voice of King Faraday. That should have been pushed a lot harder in marketing.
Yeah, I think that would have been a really nice thing to know going into this. You know, something really exciting to look forward to. I would have loved that.
So right now we are just waiting to see if there is a post-credit scene to all this.
Yeah, so far the credits are going pretty smoothly. The style that they got going on, just the assorted color illustrations, I guess draft runs of characters, postures, equipment, and so forth. There's even one of her butt.
Of course.
She's got a fanny pack. Fantastic.
She's got a fanny pack and she packs a fanny.
This woman's out of control. And as we can see here, coming down the aisle in green, mixed with a nice black texture there, it's, I guess, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Monster Big Eye.
Well, of course, you do say coming down the aisle. If you enjoy our vocal stylings, of course, Courage Pro Wrestling does return to Hamilton, Ontario, March 20th. Two shows, Return to Heritage, as well as the Next Generation Showcase. The showcase will, of course, be hosted by yours truly, Mize and I doing commentary for Return to Heritage.
It's going to be quite an exciting event going down there. Rumbles, matches, and all sorts of confrontations and hoo-has and hilarity of all kinds. It's going to be big.
Juggalo icon Madman Pondo coming to CPW.
Apparently he's going to be part of the Unlucky Seven for the Gore Park Championship.
That is an exclusive drop on here. We haven't announced that in Courage Pro yet.
Oh, snap. Didn't even know that. I thought that's what they were advertising for this whole thing going forward. Oh, I can't wait for that.
And it looks like we are about to find out. Posters?
No, it wouldn't have been on the posters. I didn't see any match setups for that. They normally just put the roster of fantastic athletes involved.
So there is no post-credit scene on this feature.
Nah.
Nah. So that about wraps us up for this week, this month, sorry. This month's feature being Catwoman Hunted. Next month, we will be doing the Justice League versus the Fatal Five.
That movie's a pretty exciting one. I guess it's Jessica Cruz. We get to see various villains from the future who have more than once taken on their fair share of superheroes and all at once, especially when that league of individuals and or groups of individuals that come together, and they always outnumber them, and it's not fair because there's only five of them. Fight fair heroes.
Shana, what kind of fun knitting stuff are you working on these days? Well, I know not right now because we're at Oak.
I don't know what I'm really working on yet.
Oh, okay. Anything that you want to work on that you think would be a lot of fun?
No, not yet.
All right. And when they do, when you do figure something out, where can they find that?
I don't remember the things right now.
Somewhere on the internet lies.
There's Mookie's Buddies, I think, on Instagram, and then there's Mookie's _ Buddies, but I don't remember if that's on Instagram.
That was Twitter.
Twitter, there
you go. And to find Shauna, of course, you can always find her at Six Space Hair. Mize, where can the people find you?
At Mize1987 on Twitter, OneMan Mize on Instagram. You know the usual spots. You know where I'm at.
And, of course, you can find me at ClownyJ on Twitter. You can find my official shop at whatamaneuver.net. New Clown Jester of Empire t-shirt coming soon. We've seen the rough drafts of what the logo is going to be, so look for that coming soon.
Yeah.
And until next time, folks, remember, stay safe, stay masked, do what you can, help each other out, and we will see you next time on the same pod time.
That there same pod channel, that happens to be the same pod time and pod channel and all that, do-daddly-did-dop-doodly-doodly-doo.
Ship-op-boodly-boo.
Boobly-bobbly-diddly-diddly-boobly-poo.